Hi everyone, welcome to our Grow Deeper podcast.
I'm Anna.
And I'm Carl.
So Carl, the topic of today was your idea. Do you want to ask the question you asked me a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, I can do that. And before I do that, a little story. A couple of years ago, I started a little photography project. I went out in the city and I asked people what their older self would tell them right now. What advice would they give themselves from their older self to the current one? And it was really, really interesting. It went along with photographs. I made portraits of them. And there was a website. It was called Life Journey, I think. And you had the portraits and you saw what they told themselves. And it was pretty impressive. I asked people on the street. I asked professors that I knew. And maybe for this podcast, I should revive those images and put them again on the internet. That was really, really, really good because it showed the people they had some wisdom and they knew how to have a better, maybe more legendary life. And it inspired me a lot. So the topic of today's podcast is exactly the same question. It is, what would your 80-year-old self tell you today?
And if you are already 80, what would your 90 or 100 years old self tell you today?
Exactly.
Take a couple of minutes to think about that. We're talking further, but maybe you can stop the registration and take a couple of minutes to think about it, and then you can play again our podcast and hear about our inputs.
So press the pause button now. So here we are again. Welcome back.
Welcome back. I really wish I could ask you, I'm in the public, I could ask you, what did you think? Which was your answer? And listen to the answer here right now, actually live, but it's not possible in that way.
But still, this is a podcast, but we want to engage also with you as our audience. And we have set up a website. It's called growdeeper.co. You can go there and there is a way to interact with us. You can record or just type some messages that we will get. And we were happy to include your thoughts in our podcast and maybe also invite you to participate live in the future episode. So we really, really, really feel that it's not just about us here, it's about you as well. And the more exchange we have, the better it is. So please go to growdeeper.co and let us know what you think, what your 80, 90 or 150-year-old self would tell you today.
So, I really would like to hear some answers from your public, Carl. Do you remember some of them?
No. It's okay. A couple of years ago. And I don't have them here with me. But, you know, it's this kind of thinking is really close to me. I remember I was a student and at that time I was reading some book about Christian mystics, you know, Christian spiritual people, some of them famous, some less famous. And one particular person was, I think, Thérèse of Lisieux. And she kind of inspired me to do something that I also saw with Buddhist people. And it was an exercise that you can do. And this one is not exactly like asking your 80-year-old self, but it was in the lines of, imagine that you will have to leave this world and really try to get into that feeling, try to really say goodbye to everything. And I did that. I took a weekend. I think I started on Friday. I didn't go to uni, and I started on Sunday. The journey will be over, and I didn't tell anybody. Of course, this was just me doing it, and then I started on Friday. I told myself, okay, two more days. This is it. What would you still want to do, etc., you know? And then you got into this feeling that there is nothing left to do. You got into the feeling that it's all good and that you're moving on. And then on Sunday, really, the day came, and I think I made it in a way that I just went to sleep thinking that, okay, c'est tout, rien ne va plus. And it was really fulfilling. At least for me, it was kind of being friends with everything and not have any unfinished thoughts or any kind of unfinished activity. It was kind of, bye everyone, it's all good. It's not the end, but it's just me going. And with really feeling it, being into it, taking it serious, this kind of exercise, it changed so many things. It really made everything be all right. Everything is all right. There is nothing that still has to be different than it is right now. Just full acceptance. And when I emerged out of that, I think it was in the evening, I went to get something to eat, etc. It was really peaceful. There was no feeling of sadness or of goodbye or anything. It was just kind of this exercise brought me to a feeling of it's all good.
And I think that that feeling is what people are looking for. And I think maybe 100% of time, just they are trying to get it through relationships, through activities, through material, through experiences, but actually that's the feeling that we are all looking for. Peace, a peaceful feeling that everything is okay, that I don't have to fight, and I don't have to put order. Everything is perfect.
Yeah, I fully agree. And only now that you're saying it, I realize what a shortcut I took, because I went straight to the feeling that everything is fine without having to live those 80 years to give mm-hmm. me the advice that, hey, don't worry about the nice looking house. Don't worry about the sports car. It's everything is okay. Mm-hmm. The way it is, the way whatever you have right now, it's you're basically on the winning side because you came with nothing, and whatever you have, you're already on the gain. But going back and not taking the shortcut, what the 80-year-old self, like what I would tell myself, would be that life, in its really, really deepest sense, life is already perfect. Everything is already functioning at its best. And whatever we think we can improve is just a little play on the surface of an already perfect thing. So I would tell myself, look, you want to do that nice adventurous sailing trip to Antarctica, enjoy it. There is nothing to add onto your life. It's just something that is there to give you pleasure, let's say, but it does not affect your very life. That is already perfect. So by having the nice car or that nice adventurous trip, you're not improving your life. You're just experiencing something beautiful. So I would tell or try to make myself aware of that It's already good. It's already perfect. And everything else is not related to improving life.
So I guess it's my turn to say my answer.
Absolutely.
My answer was and is also today, my 80 years old me would say it's not worth it. Do you remember that I said it a couple of weeks ago?
Yes, and I think it needs a little bit of explanation.
I think so, because it could be kind of okay, it doesn't make sense, but actually I think that life doesn't make sense, but not in the way that maybe you think if you hear that sentence. It's not worth it. Let's make it simple. I think there are two kind of levels, and the one is the material one and the other one is the not material world. And everything what we are doing here, so struggling, efforts, trying to pay the rent, to make money, to survive, to eat, to buy food, have relationships, experiences, to go to Antarctica or whatever, that makes sense in the material world. But life, it's played on the other level. So actually, everything what is more our contemplation, it's not that it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense just in the material world. I don't know if I made it simple or maybe not more difficult.
I have a thought here, maybe one experience I had, and then we can see if it's what you mean. At the end of my studies, I went with a friend to Paris, and I think it was my third time already in Paris, and it was her first time. And I was with her on the Eiffel Tower looking down at the city, and it didn't make any sense. Didn't make zero sense to be there to look at stone. So basically what you do on a trip, you go to a city and you look at buildings.
Yes.
If it's a cultural trip. Or you look at walls with something on it.
Or the seaside. Paintings. Or the mountains. Or
exactly. So you look at, in this case, Paris. You go to a museum, stare at a wall with some colorful paintings or photographs on it. And I felt it doesn't make any sense. And it was what you say on a material level. And then I thought to myself, and I wrote it in my diary, that if a journey doesn't have an inner life of itself, if it doesn't do anything inside of you, then it really doesn't make any sense. So I think it's these two levels that you're referring to. The material level, as stupid as it sounds, we go to a city and look at stone. And the other one, something happens inside of you, some kind of spiritual or contemplative experience. Is it right?
Maybe or maybe not. I would say go to Paris. It makes sense because you have an experience of a new city, maybe a new language. You're learning a new language. You have the experience of something beautiful, of beauty. And that's amazing. That's something that everybody should do, actually. But in the not material life, that is nothing. In the not material life, we are alive, period. We don't need to go to Paris. We don't need to go flying over the Alps in a hot air balloon. We don't need relationships. That makes sense just in this society, in our society. Let's make it bigger in the material world. That's why I'm saying it's not that it doesn't make sense, because it makes sense. If you feel lonely, you should call a friend. If you need to learn something new, you should learn a new language or go to Paris or make a trip. If you think you need some new input, you should hear that podcast. It's not that it doesn't make sense. It just, which level are we talking about? Because that's the point. Are we talking about I need money to buy food or I need money to buy food to be happy? And for happiness, I mean that feeling of peace that you can get just if you are looking at the non-material world.
So if I get it right, you're not saying that the material world doesn't make or we should completely ignore it, but just say we shouldn't place an overly exaggerated emphasis on it. Because where life happens, or it's not as important as life itself already.
I would say you can put all the emphasis you want, but be aware of these two levels. It's like if you're playing cards or Monopoly, you want to win. You want to win, so just go for it. Get angry. Start, I don't know, to scream if you're losing, start to cry if you're losing, start to have fun and do it. Be aware it's just a game. That the game is played on another level. Be aware of that. So I would say enjoy your life with all the high and the deeps. Enjoy your life, do whatever you want, put so much emphasis as it feel great, but be aware that there are two levels and you are playing on one of them.
So you're playing on the material level. But what about the other level? Because if I'm thinking of my life, the last 44 years, most of my experiences have happened on the material level. Of course, the experience itself is not material, but it needed the material world. Like if you go sailing on a nice, beautiful sailing trip, there is a boat, there is water, there are other people that can make or break your trip. And this is all material. Maybe the only thing that brings me to the other level is that it entirely depends on me if this is going to be a good or a bad trip. There can be the nicest people in my team and I can have a bad mood and I'm gonna have a shitty day. Or I'm just relaxed and I'm totally at peace with myself and my team can be really horrible and I can still have a good time. So what do you mean? I want to understand this relationship between the material and the non-material world that you're referring to.
Okay, there's an answer that came into my head. So I will just say it. There's no connection between the two words. It's not that if you make something, or maybe just one direction connection. I don't know. The thing is that's true. You can go to a boat trip and if you not feel great, it doesn't matter how great it is, how great the people around you are, you will don't have a great experience. So inside out, it's not outside in. On the other hand, you really don't need the boat trip to have a great experience. You can have a great experience of life even on your couch. And maybe that's the point. A great experience of life and a great experience of a boat trip. Two completely different things.
Now I'm getting it. Because life in itself is already something marvelous. And on top of that really marvelous thing, you're having a boat trip.
or not.
Or you're sitting on a couch reading a book or just lying in the grass looking at the clouds. Or maybe even be dead and still have a great experience.
Who knows? Do you know Julius Verne?
Jules Verne.
Jules Verne, okay. In Italian we say Julius Verne.
You know, it's funny. We'll do this some other time. Italians have different names for almost anything.
That's why I always had to say, do you know him? It's the same. It's the right name. Okay, let's say the author that wrote, okay, I will say maybe the wrong name of the book, Trip in the Middle of Earth. Mm-hmm. And he wrote also the trip around the world in 80 days. I don't know if the right title of the book, but the point is he wrote it from his office, from home. He just read books and say, "Oh, okay, I can put it in my book, in my trip around the world." And that's amazing. He traveled actually around the world, but he was always in his office. So he had a wonderful life experience just being at home.
I think this is true for Karl May as well. Karl May is very famous in Germany because he wrote the Winnetou story and Old Shatterhand. And my uncle had all his books. I'm not sure how many hundreds they were. A huge library. And I think Karl May was also an armchair author.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we can have a very great experience from our armchair.
A great experience of life.
Of life.
Oh, well, as far as I know, maybe there are people out there that can have a boat experience, a boat trip experience.
An out-of-body boat trip.
Exactly, sitting on my couch. Yeah, I think that's a great explanation for what I wanted to say.
So, going back to Jules Verne, how many people in the world had a great experience reading the book? Also, never being there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think you're right. He didn't experience it, but he wrote it out of his mind. So, he created all this experience in his mind and put it on paper. And then the people who read it, usually they sit somewhere and read it. They're not cycling a bike or doing something. So they actually also create that experience in their minds. And then I thought, okay, there is the physical world and the mental world, and actually everything that we experience in the physical world, most of it we only experience actually in our minds. But mm-hmm. The physical world serves as support to create that experience in the mind. Because, for example, if you take somebody who is deep asleep or maybe comatose, cannot wake up, and you bring him on the most amazing adventure trip in the world, his body was there, but he didn't experience it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to happen in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it didn't happen.
Yes. And I was thinking also about a friend of mine several years ago, and I told him, well, I have the feeling I experienced several previous lives. And I was maybe joking, maybe not, I don't know, but we were talking about it and I just said it. And he told me, well, you read a lot of books. Probably that's why you have the feeling you live several lives. That's true. Every book that I'm experiencing, I'm like in the life of the book. So I learn something new, I learn new feelings, I have new ideas. Every time that I close a book, that I finish a book, I'm thinking, okay, that was another chapter of my life that is closing right now. So that's true, actually. And I'm laying on my bed most of the time that I'm reading a book. So
then your 80-year-old self would tell you it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
The material accumulations or the living, what exactly is not worth it?
The struggle, the efforts, struggling efforts. Efforts that it costs energy, that it costs time, but not in a pleasant way.
So let's then take a situation associated with work or with effort. When I did my sailing license, I had to learn a lot before the exam, certainly 6 to 8 hours a day because my time was limited, so I had to do it all on the last minute. And I felt I was exhausted. I had to do, you know, test exams, learn the subject. So it was an effort, but it was not a bad effort. I enjoyed it. So what exactly do you mean? The struggle and the effort.
I think everything what makes you happy, go for it. everything that doesn't make you happy, just stop it. And I should say it more to me, because I think every person has difficulties to implement that sentence. And the point is, you can study a lot, maybe you can also reduce your sleeping time. The point is, you are playing Monopoly. So if it's worth it for you not to sleep, to play Monopoly, it's fine. But be aware that it's a game. You're playing Monopoly in that moment, you know? How much energy, how much feelings are you ready to spend in a Monopoly play?
So you're saying that not just the game, Risiko or Monopoly, is a game. The entire life is like a game.
I would say so, yes.
I have this feeling when I think of, let's say, a past job at the university, for example. All the feelings that went into it, the joys and the frustrations and the hopes, the highs and lows, etc. When I look back now that I'm completely free of that world, I feel the same. It's a game. But the question is, if I hadn't played that game, I wouldn't be the person that I am. I would be a different person, not a better, not a worse one, just a different person. So I understand it's not about what you play, it's about being aware that it's all a play.
Mm-hmm.
And not getting too caught. No, not even not getting too caught into it. You can get caught, you can cry, you can be desperate, you can shout, or you can be joyful. But just having this awareness, it's just a game.
Mm-hmm.
And you always say, yeah, don't cry, it's a game. You're saying cry because it's just a game.
Exactly, I want to say the same. In the three principle theory, I don't know how to say that, but I'm a three principle coach, and I'm working with the three principles, or health realization, or there are several names out there for the same. It's not a method, but let's call it method. And the thing is that your feeling comes from your thoughts. So if you have a happy feeling, it's because you are having in that moment a happy thought. If you are feeling sad, it's because in that moment you have a sad thought. And you can have a happy thought from one experience, and from the same experience, you can have a sad thought. And you will experience different feelings. What I thought at the beginning the three principles were, was like, don't cry because it's just your thought. But then I realized, well, it's not like that. It's cry because it's just a thought. Scream out, it's just a thought. It's just a feeling. Don't be scared to feel sad. Don't be scared to not feel balanced. Don't be scared to be angry, to feel sad. It's just a feeling. It's okay. So that's the same. You are playing, so go for it. Have fun. And have fun means also be into the game 100%, maybe 120% sometimes. But that's life.
But then you said your 8-year-old self would say it's not worth it. How do I connect it to what you just said?
That, I think, the 8-year-old me wanted with that sentence just to shift my attention to the life world, to the basic level. So you can struggle, but be aware of the difference. Be aware that you are playing. And sometimes when I struggle, I'm not aware of it. I really think that's the reality. I really think that's a matter of life and death, you know? And it would be easier to think, well, okay, I'm just playing Monopoly right now.
We're often making this distinction between the real life and the mundane life, but this is still one, right? It's still life itself playing its play on a mental or spiritual level and material level. For me, this is the same, you know? So it's, there is no duality between mind and matter. It's one.
It's maybe easier to split it, to explain it, but you would not say, I'm the one who is playing Monopoly right now, and then I'm another person when I'm making the coffee in the morning. You are the same person. It's the same life.
Exactly.
And if you scream out, you feel like, yeah, that's the most important thing in the world, that I get out of prison. Mm-hmm.
You know, this reminds me of something very tragic that I've heard. This kind of being in the Monopoly game and being totally in it and suffering and, you know, I'm in prison. I mean, it's a board game, but you are in prison. And
you say I'm in prison. You don't say my
little plastic character.
Exactly.
Yeah, my 3 centimeters character is in prison
right now.
That's true, because that's reality, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
I am moving a red or green plastic figure on a piece of cardboard, and it's now on one of the squares that is just like any other square, but we define it as prison, and you're not getting the 4,000 whatever per month rent from it. Yeah, that's really a deep comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Relating to that, the tragic experience, my very famous and beloved red Opel Corsa that I had since 1994, that is on several Google Earth images from my house. By the way, we love Opel Corsas. This is why it's so famous. So we bought that from a car dealer close to Nuremberg. And a couple of years later, I've heard that he committed suicide and set his whole company on fire. And I thought, how tragic. I think it was financial reasons. And I think also somebody from his family also died. I'm not sure. It was a really tragic thing. But I often think about it, that when I hear the story, I'm thinking about, you know, in what kind of reality did he live in? Like, you know, Monopoly style, this mm-hmm. kind of, I am in prison, you're actually just playing a game where your plastic character is in prison. So I'm trying to put it on his situation, in what kind of game was he in that he didn't see any other way out? If we understand that life is the same, whether you are sitting in your living room making a podcast, or you are in a physical prison somewhere in this world, it's still life. And he obviously took it very serious where he was in. Maybe his account going into the minuses, maybe millions, whatever, I don't know. And he took it so seriously. He took this Monopoly game really, really serious. And he thought, okay, I need to get out. So he threw out the baby with the bathwater, and he could have just stepped out of the situation. He could, for example, declared bankruptcy and said, look, my company didn't go well. I'm closing it. I'm still alive. Everything's fine. I will need to see how to repay that if possible, or if not, you default and this is it. By law, you have a couple of years with a little bit of less that's available for you, but then you're out. I don't know, I'm not a legal person here, not a financial person, but I was just thinking about, you know, his reality of taking such a drastic step for something that we have simply just now decided is just a game. So for him, it was not a game. It was a game of life and death, obviously.
Yes.
And why I'm saying this is that it's easy for us who are doing well, you know, no big problems right now, no life or existential threatening problems. But what about all these people that are like in his situation, not knowing how to pay his employees and maybe himself? So how can you then still see this as, hey, it's just a game, relax. Relax, it's a game, or no, cry, be desperate, it's just a game.
Mm-hmm. You said he was in that game was real. And we all know it when we are playing something and we are screaming or we don't want to play anymore. What are we doing in that moment? That's our reality in that moment. Even if I just you're playing cards with a 7 years old baby or child, you know, that's our reality. And it feels so, I don't want to play that game anymore. I'm angry right now. It's the same. I can understand the people out there can say, what? It's not the same. What are you talking about? If you're one of them, please take a couple of minutes to think differently. The risk is not the same if you're playing cards with your 7 years old child or if you have to declare bankrupt and maybe have a lot of debts. The risk in the reality is not the same. But how do you feel? It's the same. You feel a risk in that moment. And maybe it could be helpful for people to see there are a lot of people out there that had the same experience of that person, financial problems, debts, maybe the company that didn't go well. And some people commit suicide and some other not. Why? What is happening? What are they thinking differently? Let's look at the people then think, well, it's a hard time, it was a hard time, or it's now a hard time, but I don't commit suicide. What are they thinking that the other people are not? Because that's the point, there's a possibility. Otherwise, if it was a bad experience for all the people out there, then everybody would commit suicide. Everybody, but it's not. So there must be a difference between the two stories, but it's not the difference between the two stories in the material world, it's a difference in the two stories in the mental world.
Yeah, I think you also mentioned when you were still studying those interviews or those, it was an experiment, but I think it was an analysis or an investigation on people who lived in concentration camps, that some of them were quite okay. Mm-hmm. After that. So maybe you can explain it, because I think it relates very much to what we're talking now.
Absolutely. That was for me really a wow experience, as I knew about that. It was a medical doctor who was studying the sociology of medicine. Let's put it that way. And it's called Aaron Antoniowski. And he was making a research on Jewish women having the menopause. And he made a questionnaire and he realized as he was putting the data together that there was a group of them that was that had the experience of a concentration camp. I don't remember exactly if it was about 73% or 77%, but it doesn't make so much difference for what I'm going to say. Let's say 73% had no psychological and emotional balance. So they had psychological struggles or disorders. You would say, well, 73% of people experience concentration camp, need to go from where they were to a new country, experience three wars, starting without the family, probably starting a new life again. no wonder. But then he turned this result upside down. He found out, well, there are 27% of women that have an emotional and psychological health. What happened? 27% is a lot. I don't think I could never experience what they experienced in my whole life, you know? And he started to ask himself, okay, what did those women do, or what did they think? What? It was a general question. What happened? What is the difference? And he developed the model of salutogenesis. So looking not at what happened on the pathological way, but how can we develop health, mental and physical health, which are the factors that contribute to mental health. And well, it's a really interesting model. You can look in internet, and basically, I don't remember exactly, but basically it was like that those women had a sense that the life was fair and fine. They can see the sense of life, that life could be predictable in some way. And the third, I really don't remember, I had to look for it. But look at that, because it's really interesting. He says the sense of coherence was the most important thing.
So these are, of course, psychological or technical terms, scientific terms that are concepts and somehow hard to experience directly. But what would you say, how does this connect to our discussion now about the mental life and the physical life that we experience? It seems that the 27% experienced more or less the same situation in a concentration camp, but the consequences on their mental health were not as drastic compared to the other 73%. One could argue that they just didn't have the worst experiences. I'm just playing devil's advocate mm-hmm. here. You could argue that, okay, you know, these were those who didn't have the worst of the worst.
And I would say, which is the where are the boundaries? Which is the level? Okay, how many people had to die in order for you to have the worst experience? Mm. That doesn't make sense to look at it that way, you know? Yes. So how long have you been, if you've been in the concentration camp for, I don't know, let's say 25 months, you had a not so bad experience. If you started with 26 months and up to 30, you had a middle experience, 30 until the end, you had a really bad experience. That doesn't make sense. This is so silly to think about that. So how many debts do you have in order to have a really bad experience of your financial problems? And there are a lot of people out there that are really, yeah, but you don't understand what my situation is even worse. Are we making a challenge who had the worst situation? No. Otherwise, there are a lot of millionaire people out there. They had actually to be happy all the time, have no problems. And I really understand that money can open one way and the other one too, and the other one too. If you don't have money, maybe you have just one way or even no way. But that's the point. That's the material level. And I'm really talking about this material level and the other one, the life level. And all those arguments doesn't make sense in the life level.
Relating to the concentration camp thing, there was an interview on the radio many years ago with one of the survivors, and she was a perfectly happy, balanced woman that really enjoyed life and the small things. She was not bitter at all. The most significant factor influencing how you go out of it is how you think about it. I'm not sure exactly what her way of thinking was, but she said something along the lines, even though these horrible things happen, I don't allow myself to hate these people. Because the situation is much more complex. Maybe they also didn't want to be there. They were forced. They also tried to survive. They knew if they desert the army, they would be killed just as me. So she felt even a connection with them. So, okay, you have to do your job of supervising us detainees. I have to do my job of being an inmate in a concentration camp. So she was really maintaining a humane state of mind in that situation. And she came out of it, and I think many people in her family didn't survive, but she came out of it, married, had a happy life, made a career, whatever she was. What I retained from that interview was, it's not what happens to you in the first place, it's how you think about it or how you process it. So you cannot influence what happens from the outside, but you can to a great degree influence what goes in your head, how you process that, what happens to you. And she somehow had this strength. She had this capacity to process it in a way that didn't turn her life into hell. And I read also the book of Viktor Frankl about his experience in a concentration camp and all the mechanisms that play there, how you're being dishumanized as an inmate, etc. He was already a trained psychiatrist before he went into the camp, so he was kind of aware what can happen. I think this also helped him afterwards. And for him, I also had the impression that he wasn't giving control to the outside world for what happened within him. Even though there are passages where he writes that he was reduced to such a level of basic, quote-unquote, primitive life that there was not much energy to think or process things, but somehow it led to him not being swamped in all this negativity. So he came out of it in a sane way. So again, the concept is that it's you who create the feeling for your experience.
Always. There's no exception. It's inside out. All the time.
But we might not be aware of it.
No. When I'm struggling, I'm not aware of this. But that's fine. It's like you're playing Monopoly and you get angry. It's okay.
1 week ago, we had a very heavy storm. I wasn't here. I was on holiday with you. But at home, there was a big storm and a lot of water, and many people, including us, had water in their cellars at home. And I can imagine how you can feel frightened. You have this hailstorm and the heavy raining and the wind and the thunderstorms, the lightning, and you get scared. So it overwhelms you. I'm creating this picture because I'm exactly the opposite. So for me, this is like, wow, that's a force of nature. And even though I might be watching how the water fills my house, you know, in that moment, if I cannot do anything about it, I would just wait, or I would go there and try to save some things from getting wet. But for me, this is completely fascinating. Other people would feel it's frightening. They're somehow in danger.
Even if their cellars are not full of water.
Exactly. This whole spectrum of experiences, from sunny weather being experienced as threatening and a severe thunderstorm being experienced as fascinating. This is us. This is our creation. So I want to go back to our answers, and I also want to encourage our listeners, if you made it through here, hello, we're happy that you're still around. Go to growdeeper.co and let us know what your 80 to 250 year old self would tell you today about anything, about life, about your job, about your relationship, about buying that $2 million airplane. So going back to our answer, to yours first, it's not worth it with the significance of shifting your focus from the so-called material, mundane, to the experiential level.
Yes, to the life level. Everything what is more than contemplation makes sense just in the material life.
Everything that is more than contemplation. So my mental image of contemplation is somebody sitting in a monastery or on a meditation cushion, meditating, contemplating. What do you mean by that?
Everything what is more than be alive makes sense just in the material world.
Okay. So what I take out of it, I really value my own answer now even more than before. This feeling that everything is already perfect, already at its best. And on top of that, we can have these additional beautiful experiences. Let's just make a parenthesis between good and bad, and we have experiences. So we are experiencing life, basically life experiences itself. Life contemplates it. I think it's a nice thing. I'm not sure how well I can transport this to our audience. For me, this makes perfect sense. And maybe one of my, as you already know, favorite people to listen to, Sadhguru, he said something very, very funny. That imagine this whole big universe, you know, there's galaxies and many of them, and they're planetary systems, and the galaxy moves through the space, everything perfect. There was no galactic accident, and then in our solar system, all the planets went on their way, everything was fine, you know, no planet hit the other one, the sun is still shining, it came on time this morning and the morning before, and for millions and billions of years, it's done its job perfectly. And in all of that perfection, it's me who has a big problem today.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to laugh about this because it relates so well to, you know, everything is fine. Everything is perfect. It's there. Experience it or be aware of it. At least that. Be aware of it. Don't sleep through life. Be present. So simple. But would you still say it's not worth it, or how would you verbalize it?
I'm not saying that. My 80 years old me is saying that, so I cannot put other words in her mouth.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So enjoy your Monopoly game.
Exactly. Knowing that you're playing Monopoly.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this would be it for me. I took a lot of inspiration out of this.
Me too. And I'm looking forward to hear from you guys out there, your answers and your thoughts, because I'm really looking forward to get inspired from you.
Exactly.
So thank you very much for listening.
We hope that we have been good guests, that we left you more enriched, and see you next time.
See you next time.